coming from a place of no return. Now is time for one of my favorite stories, and I apologize if I've told you all this before. It's a scene right out of Main Street, Canada, where a group of friends who met regularly to share coffee and swap stories were at the local donut shop. And usually they talked about politics and sports, but on this one occasion, the conversation drifted to a very, rather grim subject, the subject of death. One of his friends looked up from his double-double and asked the others, "What would you like people to say about you at your funeral?" And after some careful consideration, one of the friends answered, "I would want people to say he was a great husband and father, an example for many to follow." Another friend replied, "I would want people to say he was a great humanitarian who really cared for his community." Another said that he'd hoped that people would admire his faith and his commitment to the church. And so on and so on the conversation went, with each suggesting warm platitudes about themselves that they hoped would be conveyed at their funerals. Finally, one of the friends, who hadn't said anything in this exchange, was obviously very deep in thought about the question. And finally, he answered this way, "Personally, I would hope at my funeral someone might say, 'Look, he's still moving.'" Death. It is really something we just don't want to talk about. As a pastor, I've encountered all kinds of reactions and behaviors associated with death. Some people try to lessen the blow of a death. We use euphemisms like, "He's passed away," or "He's gone to glory." I had a friend who used to say that when someone died, they graduated. Maybe they might say, "Or called home." We use these phrases all in the hopes of somehow easing our discomfort. For some, the discomfort is in thinking about their own inevitable death. It leads us, therefore, to make careless decisions when we think about our own death. People who try to avoid thinking about their own death do reckless things like avoiding preparing a will or getting their power of attorney documents ready. Others actually avoid buying life insurance, thinking that what you're doing is declaring that you put a bet on your own life. We also have come up with bad theology to help bring comfort to us around the subject of death. Ideas that have no biblical support float around all the time. When a child dies, what do we tell somebody? They've become an angel. Actually, in the wonderful musical, Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, probably my favorite musical really, there's one song that carries the line in response to Jacob getting the news of Joseph's death. The line in the song goes this way: "There is one more angel in heaven, one more star in the sky." It's entertaining, yes. Comforting, maybe. Truthful, no. Not at all. No one likes to confront death at all, except maybe the undertaker. Sensing the avoidance of death, Immanuel Kant, the German philosopher, wrote extensively what he called existential anxiety. And what he meant by that was that every time we thought about death or encountered a death, we would get this anxiety within us. It was an anxiety built around the fact that we feared our own deaths. It is the anxiety we feel when we go to a funeral home, or we go to a memorial service, or we go to the hospital to see a terminally ill friend or a loved one. Seeing death played out in someone else forces us, Kant says, to confront our own mortality. Death just rips a hole in survivors, doesn't it? A hole that, I'll be honest, never really heals. A professor of mine at seminary, Dr. Jackson, was asked a question when we were taking a course on death and dying. Someone asked him if the pain we feel after someone dies ever goes away. His answer has stayed with me all these years. For he said simply, no, the pain never goes away. It just lessens in severity. Therefore, it is with some trepidation that we journey to Bethany of Judea, to the home of some of Jesus' dearest and closest friends. It is there that death has wrought its destruction. Into this home, Jesus has often come as a guest and a chance to get away from the pressures of life and ministry. It was a place Jesus used to go to kind of let down his hair. It was a place where death had brought pain, loss, separation. Knowing the deep bond between Jesus and Lazarus, word was sent to Jesus of Lazarus being quite ill. Actually, frankly, he was dying. I suspect strongly that this message was sent in the hope that Jesus would come quickly and heal Lazarus. But oddly enough, what did he do? We read that Jesus lingered two more days before coming to Bethany. I find that really odd, because when someone in my family or in my care as a pastor dies, I go as soon as possible to be with the family. But Jesus waits. In what is clearly an intentional delay, Lazarus dies, and according to Jewish custom, he was buried the same day he died. It was a necessary thing to do because it was a warm climate and the possibility of disease was very real if a person wasn't buried immediately. According to Jewish custom, Lazarus' body would have been wrapped tightly with cloths, which were then sprinkled with spices and perfumes. And according to custom, the family and friends of Lazarus would be in mourning for 30 days. During this time, friends and relatives would come over to comfort the living and mourn the dead. Often they would demonstrate their grief visually by dressing in sackcloths and sprinkling ashes and dirt over themselves. They would act out their grief in great dramatic fashion by weeping and tearing their hair. The result of this death on the family would be demonstrated as family and friends would literally go into the house and ransack it, smashing pottery, overturning furniture, all with the purpose of portraying that a thief has broken in and stolen away a loved one. Death in Judaism was a robber, taking precious loved ones without warning often. It is into this scene that Jesus enters. To say it was a grim experience to come to Bethany that day on this particular occasion would be an understatement. To the best of our knowledge, Lazarus was still a younger man, probably around Jesus' age, and we're not sure, but we think he was never married. That's why he still lived with his sisters. He was a man who had been cut down in the very prime of his life. Martha learns that Jesus is approaching Bethany. She runs out to meet him. And what were the very first words that come out of her mouth? Martha's words are born of anguish and great pain. Lord, if only you'd been here, our brother would not have died. Oh, how many times have we said that? How many times have we said that when we're grieving and we echo similar sentiments? If only the doctors had found the cancer sooner. If only they hadn't gone out driving on those slippery roads. If only they'd been more attentive to what the child was doing. If only. Well, sadly we know if onlys don't change a thing. Nothing. Death always seems to have the last word, and dwelling on the if-onlys only serves to feed our guilt and our pain. Jesus, seeing this terrible scene of grief and hearing the cutting words from Martha, reacts as most of us would. John 11:35 is the shortest verse in the Bible, and it reads, Jesus wept. Were his tears born of sorrow? Were they from the fact that he had lost his dear friend? Were they tears of compassion over the grief that this family and friends were experiencing? I think it was all of this, and probably much more. I don't know if you noticed, but twice in this passage we read that Jesus was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. These words suggest not just sadness, but anger, outrage at what death had done to this family, what death had done to this community. I believe that Jesus was provoked by the havoc that death wreaks as it invades the human experience. And when it leaves, the only thing behind is fear, pain, grief, loss. I also believe that in his righteous anger at what death had done in Bethany, it was part of his motivation to convince Jesus to do something about this thing called death. That on this day, at least, death would not have the last word. Like a warrior strapping on a sword, like a champion calling for his next opponent, Jesus says to Martha, "Where have you laid him?" In other words, take me to him. Bring on that challenger of death. It is in the exchange of words, as Jesus' motivation begins to build, that he makes what his contemporaries and many of us today would think are the most outrageous claims he ever made. In verse 25, what does he say? "I am the resurrection and the life." Now, those words, they play real well at a funeral. They are powerful words, especially during Lent and Easter. But what exactly do they mean? "He who believes in me will live, even though he dies, and whoever believes in me will never die." That's a difficult verse, folks. It sounds almost like doublespeak, doesn't it? If we want to understand these words, we need to first pause and reflect on what exactly death is. What is it? How would you define death? You know, there was a child therapist who worked with grieving children who simply asked them to write out their descriptions of what death is. There was a girl named Gilda, age 8, who said, When you die, they put you in a box and bury you in the ground because you don't look so good. Stephanie, age 9, said, "When you die, you don't have to do homework in heaven unless your teacher's there." And 10-year-old Raymond said, "A good doctor can help you so you don't die. A bad doctor sends you to heaven." You know, we can find these childish opinions amusing, but I don't know if we could do any better, you and I. What is death? Some would say that death is just simply a chemical, biological phenomenon. The heart stops beating, the neurons stop firing, and that's it. If that is so, why does it feel like there's so much more going on? Some say that death is simply the end of existence, believe it or not. But why do we have this incurable longing for the eternal, for a life beyond this one? Why do people talk as though that the person who had died still lives on somewhere, somehow? I think the best way to describe death is separation. First of all, it is the separation of our bodies from our souls. When we die, our souls leave the physical body. So death is not an end, but rather it's a separation. That is why when we look in a casket at our loved ones, we're never satisfied. Because the body is there, but the person we know is not there. Death is also a separation of people from one another. Someone who's been a part of our lives is no longer a part of our lives when they die, and we feel that loss. That is why no matter how much time has passed, and no matter how many years, we can still feel overcome by the feelings of loss when we think about a loved one who has died. Death is separation. Well, if death is separation, then resurrection must be restoration and reunion. Restoration of body and spirit. Not the old mortal body which turns to dust, but a new glorified body fit for heaven. When Jesus says, "I am the resurrection, he who believes in me will live even though he dies," he's announcing his victory over physical death, promising that even though believers will die physically, our bodies will be separated from our spirits. In the life to come, we will be restored to whole persons. We won't spend eternity as disembodied spirits just drifting through the cosmos. Jesus also said, "I am the life. Whoever lives and believes in me will never die." With those powerful words, Jesus is announcing victory over spiritual death. Just as physical death separates us from our loved ones, spiritual death can separate us from God. Human beings were created to have fellowship with God. To be spiritually dead is to be cut off. It's to be separated from God. When Jesus says, "I am the life," he is saying that whoever believes in him will no longer be separated from God, not in this life and not in the life to come. To be human, to live, to be a whole person, body and spirit, in relationship with others and relationship with God, that's what Jesus is doing. When death comes like a thief, it separates what was meant to be together. Physical death separates us from each other. Spiritual death separates us from God. That's some pretty heavy stuff to absorb in one sitting. So let me put it another way. Have you ever been somewhere special with someone that you love dearly? Perhaps it's just sitting on a park bench on a warm sandy beach or in front of a roaring fire in a family room. In moments such as this, have you ever experienced that sensation that this is a perfect moment? Did you know there was years ago a car company that had an advertisement where a guy's driving down the Australian highway and he talks about that perfect moment and then it's gone. But it can't be a perfect moment, because he's alone. I'm talking about those perfect moments where you just feel right with your special friend or your loved one, right, that you're right with God, you're right with the universe. Maybe in such moments like that, you can't help but remember a song of praise that speaks your heart's situation, that praises God for your relationship with your loved one and your relationship with God. That is life. Body and mind united in the moment. The whole thing bathed in the goodness and the presence of God. Death robs us of that. It separates body and spirit. It separates us from our loved ones. Death is a thief. It is the enemy. It haunts every day of our lives. And when we encounter it, when we hear of a house fire or we hear of a high school shooting or a death of a friend, it stops us in our tracks. That is why Jesus announced, "I am the resurrection and the life." That is why he girded up for battle. That is why he said, "Take me to him." In verse 39, we pick up the story. Jesus comes to the tomb. "Take the stone away." Martha said, "Hold on a minute." He's been in there 4 days. By now, it would be pretty stinky. Perhaps she believed Jesus wanted to see his friend. Maybe Jesus wanted to grieve for him, but I suspect there was more to her caution. I think she knew what Jesus was going to do, or attempt to do anyway. Do you hear what she's saying? It's a nice thought, Jesus, but you can't beat death. No one can. Jesus wasn't listening. He called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." Now how it happened, we don't know, but by the sound of his voice, the stench of death was replaced with the sweet perfume of life. Skin that was cold and hard suddenly became soft and warm, muscles stiff with rigor mortis, filled with strength. The heart beat once, then twice, and then blood flowed through his veins. Lungs filled with air, nerve endings twitched, electrical impulses sent a message to Lazarus' brain, "I am alive! I'm alive! And Jesus is calling my name." That day, Jesus confronted the great enemy and he won. Because Jesus is the resurrection and the life. Death need no longer be a separation of body from spirit, or people from one another, and persons from God. Though we die physically, we can receive back our bodies, we can receive back our loved ones. Though we came into this world spiritually dead, separated from God by sin, we can be restored with God in this life and in the life to come. Do you believe this? That's the question that Jesus asked Martha that day in Bethany. Do you believe this? And that is the question he's still asking. Do you believe this? I ask this because Jesus' claim of being the resurrection and the life only applies to those who believe it, those who accept it as true, those who commit themselves to following the one who made the claim, namely Jesus Christ. George Herbert, the English poet, who lived from 1593 to 1633, expressed this truth very well. He penned, "Death used to be an executioner, but the gospel has made him just a gardener." In other words, death may put the seeds, that is you and I, in the ground to perish, but God, through Christ, makes new life come from that death. For those who claim to have believed it, I want to remind you that on this day in Bethany, death did not have the last word. Jesus did. And this is what he said, "Take off the grave clothes, let him go, turn him loose, set him free, let him live." That's what Jesus is saying to each one of us today. Take off the robes of death. Squash the existential anxiety that's within you and embrace the life offered in Christ.